From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of March 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling the bottom half of the state of Illinois today for a cover crops meeting and a beef cattle meeting. You'll hear more about that cover crops meeting in just a bit, and we'll also talk about the commodity markets today with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And check the weather forecast, too, with Mike Tenura from T-Storm right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn for the day settled at $7.48 and a quarter. It was down 9.5 cents. July at $7.28 and a half, 6 and a quarter lower. And December at $6.67 and a half, down 4 3/4. May soybeans $17.75 a cent, finished 18 cents lower. July at $16.82 and a quarter, down 16 1/4. And November beans at $14.93, down 15 for the day. Bean meal up 80 cents. $485.90, and the bean oil at $74.29, down $1.68. Wheat futures 20 lower at $10.85 3/4 in the May. July harvest month down 16 3/4 at $10.74 1/2, and the hard red July at $10.90 1/4, down 15 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures settled at $136.95. That was up 97 1/2 cents for the afternoon. The May at $166.50. They finished 70 cents higher, and the lean hogs today finished at $122.07 1/2, down 90 cents for under 100 pounds on the afternoon. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media, willag.org. Matt Bennett at agmarket.net now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the commodity markets. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Can you give me your overview of the market today and maybe the past week and what you think might be about to happen, if anything?
Well, you know, Todd, it certainly last week we gave up some ground on both corn and beans, old crop and new. This week, you know, we actually have gotten that back and then some. Actually been a pretty darn nice week. And you've seen you know, buyers a little more active now here towards the end of the week. On Thursday, you come in here and the market's not quite as excited as what it's been. You know, you've got beans down double digits, front month corn, as you and I speak, down double digits. But we've got to keep in mind some of the rallies that we've seen of late. For instance, D's corn yesterday, D's corn the day before yesterday, posted contract high closes 2 days in a row. And so, you know, we've seen some awfully good prices in here. I've got to think that we've seen a fair amount of sales hit the books, especially when you're looking over here at new crop. And I've got to think maybe some of these old crop sales, we've seen some shake loose as well there with, for instance, a move, you know, in our backyard, bidding back versus the May, where they were bidding versus the July previously. And we picked up some bases with that move. And so I'm just wondering if that didn't shake a few bushels loose here in the last day or so.
What are your expectations for the close of the week tomorrow?
Well, you know, you've got to think that today could have a little bit to do with some profit taking as well. Anybody on the long side of the market's been well rewarded of late, and you've got a big report out next Thursday, and it typically carries a ton of volatility with it. So, you know, I think going into the weekend, you've got to be cautious as to assume that you're going to race higher. I think that something like today, or a muted version of today, is what I would expect whenever we're heading into the weekend.
Next week, the United States Department of Agriculture will release both the grain stocks report, that's the quarterly number, and the prospective plantings figures. I see that agmarket.net has its estimates out. What are they?
Yeah, we're 90.7 on corn, 89.8 on beans. We felt pretty strongly we'd retain at least that 180 million acre mix. We know wheat acres are up, cotton acres are going to be up. But you've got to think that corn acres, even though we've got really strong prices, would be hurt, especially in fringe areas, especially where someone didn't get the anhydrous on. So we do think the bean acres will be pretty darn stout. But I don't look for corn acres to be excessively higher than, you know, maybe 91 million acres. So right now we're at 90.7 and 89.8.
And USDA, as a reminder, was at 92 in their outlook form. That's not exactly official numbers. And 88 million for their soybeans. So you're a couple million, not quite that much above their soybean number, but 1.3 below their corn figure. What happened in that inter intervening time, if anything, that changed what you were thinking about the marketplace, not necessarily what USDA was thinking at the time?
You know, the first couple of months of the year, beans really worked hard to pick up some acres. And you saw, you know, your crop insurance price, $5.90 on corn, $14.33 on beans. Got to think that that still is pretty favorable as far as beans were concerned. But then over the last month here, you know, we've seen beans up about 60 cents. And then you saw corn up about 75 cents off of those averages. And so obviously the corn market has wildly outperformed soybeans. But I've got to think that previous to that, these numbers are supposed to be calculated as of March 1st. You've got to think beans did enough over the summer time frame to say, hey, you know, we'll take some of those acres where someone doesn't want to outlay $1,000 an acre for corn. And so it's a big reason why we feel like bean acres are still going to be fairly stout.
Is there a reaction in the market if your bean acre comes to fruition?
I don't know that it'll be a huge reaction. I think if you would happen to get beans above 90, you know, it would certainly raise a lot of eyebrows. I think if corn was below 90, it'd raise a lot of eyebrows. But, you know, as long as you don't get corn above maybe 92, I don't know that you're going to see a huge move there. Just don't go to sleep on the stocks report, because quarterly stocks on March 31st oftentimes has actually moved the market every bit as much as what the planting numbers have. It's just that people weren't expecting it going in, and that's part of the reason why they got surprised.
And in this case, do you think usage has been strong?
I do think usage has been strong. I don't know that it's going to show up stronger than what the trade's expecting, but I think usage has been pretty strong, and I expect it to be moving forward. You know, our export loadouts coming up look like they're going to be awfully strong. CIF values down at the Gulf have certainly been screaming, so got to think that this export booking and loadout over the next few weeks is going to be pretty strong, especially on corn.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. You know, I've been traveling a lot in the last day and a half. I started out in Paducah this morning, or near there, at Dixon Springs. We had a really great beef meeting last night, gathered a whole bunch of beef producers in the southern part of the state of Illinois to introduce them to Saline River Farms, which is potentially a brand new packing plant in that part of the world. We'll have more on that later this week or next week early, one of the two. And then I made a quick trip starting around 6:30 this morning all the way back to Champaign County, 3.5-4 hour run, so that I could be at a cover crops meeting to talk with Shalimar Armstrong and Richard Roth, both from Purdue, who are here discussing much of the work that they've been doing recently. Shalimar has been a guest on the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast several times. Richard Roth has not. Thank you, Richard and Shalimar, for making the trip to Champaign County, first of all. We appreciate that. And let's start with kind of the discussion points that you took up this morning. I believe we should begin with cereal rye and the 60 pounds of nitrogen that disappears with it, or is just mostly held in space. Can you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, so, you know, cereal rye is really good at scavenging nitrogen from the soil, but it's really stingy when you think about, you know, whether or not it gives it back to the following crops. And so what we have found over time is that most of the nitrogen in the cereal rye biomass is not released to the soil, and so that equates to about 60 pounds. And so what you end up with is a deficit of about 60 pounds of nitrogen in the system where you're going to actually be planting your cash crops.
Shalimar, does this show up in yield or some other place as a reduction, or what happens with it? And is there a time in which you think that it might show back up as kind of a savings account?
Yeah, so basically we examine the corn plant over its growth and development, and we do nitrogen analysis of the content. And by R6, we see a deficit in about 60 pounds. And so that's a good portion of that. I would say on average about 80% of that is in the cereal rye. And that cereal rye, the fate of that nitrogen is more likely to go to the soil relative to that cash crop that's planted behind it. So, for example, we found that only 10%, about 10% of the nitrogen that 60 pounds that the cover crop is taking up actually gets to the corn plant. So as you begin to build that organic matter storage, we like to call it, over time, you should start seeing greater potential to release nitrogen into the solution that has high utility for the cash crop. But it's not an instant process. And so you have to adapt your management, right? Either your nitrogen management, or one of the points that we brought out was to, adapt the cover crop selection, right? So if you're going to go corn, you want to put something before the corn, a cover crop before the corn that has a lower CN ratio that then gives back nitrogen a little bit more than cereal rye. And we use Bonanza clover in multiple portions of the state, and we found great potential, even with zero nitrogen applied. We found upwards to 40-50 bushel difference with Bonanza clover corn versus cereal rye corn. And most of the time, Bonanza clover is equal to the control, and sometimes greater. And so it's a little bit, it releases, the Bonanza clover releases more nitrogen back that it scavenges relative to cereal rye. Also, the other big component is the Bonanza clover is taking the nitrogen from the atmosphere more likely than from the soil. And so you have a better nitrogen environment that you're planting your corn into.
He mentioned something that I want you to define for me, the C-to-N ratio.
Yeah, so the C-to-N ratio is simply the amount of carbon in a residue divided by the amount of nitrogen in the residue. And so most books will tell you that if it is above 24 carbon to one nitrogen, that you will actually see tie up of nitrogen within the soil. And if it's below that threshold, you should see release of nitrogen from those residues. Now, what we've seen in our research is that number is probably closer to about 16 to 1 would be that threshold. And so typically we see with cereal rye, C-to-N ratios greater than that. And with the Bonanza clover, we see below that 16 to 1 threshold. And so that's what gives us promise that the Bonanza can actually provide some sort of nitrogen credit. Better so than cereal rye.
And when you all both laid these plots out, you decided it was maybe some important to do precision agriculture in the process as well. Yes. Can you tell me something about that?
There are two different ways that you can plant the cover crop. Well, a couple of different ways. You can fly it on with an airplane that's broadcast. You don't have it's a random, right? Or you can drill it with a grain drill, which is a little bit more precise. But then we thought we can go to the next level, right? And so myself and Dr. Amir Singapore got together and decided to do a significant amount of work on precision applied cover crops, where we plant the cover crops in strips across the field, leaving what we call a skip row. It's a row that where no cover crops are planted, which is a vacant space of about 15 inches that the farmer can come back in the spring and hit that space using RTK guidance. And so you think about a couple of benefits. Number one, non-intersecting growing zones of the cover crop and cash crop. So you possibly could reduce some of that antagonistic relationship over nitrogen, reduce that tie up. Another benefit is that open space in the spring when it begins to warm up can dry out faster. And then its temperature is warming up closer to what you need for a good germination. And then last, there's the potential to get the same biomass from the cover crop with less seed. And so your seed cost is a big portion of your cover crop adoption costs. So if you can get the same performance with less input, right, when you adopt, then you're increasing the potential of your profit margin.
It's because sunlight gathering is greater across the strips than it is across the whole field? Why does?
Yeah, so basically the biology of plants is that it's you reduce the competition when you have more space between the plants. And so it's getting sunlight from other angles that it wouldn't get if you had planted everything in the normal density.
the Balanza clover, does it vary very much from north to south as to where it really can occupy a space in these cover crop trials and in cover crop fields?
Yeah, so we do see that what we like to call growing degree days or heat units significantly drives the growth and performance of the Balanza clover. So as you go from north to south, we saw greater biomass, and if you have greater biomass, greater nitrogen uptake from the atmosphere, ranging from like 1,200 pounds per acre to upwards to 3,500 to 4,000 pounds per acre in the southern tip of Indiana.
So now we've got cover crops that are being precision planted. You're interseeding corn in this case with that crop, and you have one other piece of technology you decided you wanted to put in. What is it and why?
Yeah, so what we've been doing is we've been using UAVs or drones basically to do a couple things. Assess the cover crop performance across the field, and then from that, use the information that we gather from those flights to plan different things such as fertilizer management and seeding rates for the cash crops following the cover crops. And so the reason that we might want to do this is because within a given field, there's going to be a lot of variation in the cover crop growth. And so we may need to manage different areas of the field based upon the cover crop production. And so, for instance, if we have cereal rye growing in a field and we have an area with, let's say, 200 to 300 pounds per acre of biomass, we are going to need to manage that a lot different than a part of the field that maybe has, you know, 2,500 pounds per acre of biomass. And so things that we might manage would be nitrogen management, so starter nitrogen rates, side dress nitrogen rates, and then also seeding rates. And so we could use either management zones or make full variable rate prescriptions dependent on the technology that the producer has access to.
And finally, Shalimar, what's kind of the take-home message for the producers that were here at the Tool Shed in Homer, Illinois, out on the farm as it relates to cover crops and the work you've been presenting to them today?
Yeah, so the take-home message is when you adopt a conservation, an in-field conservation like cover crops, you have to expand your toolbox, right? And so you have to adapt your management. And we presented some possible options that we're studying for farmers to look at to close the yield gap, because we don't want a negative agronomic trade-off when you adopt the cover crop. So number one, just cover crop species. Rotate your cover crop with your cash crop. Do a light, low seeding ratio cover crop like an overwintering legume before corn, and then before soybean, you can afford to do your cereal rye. All right. Number two, if you're going to do cereal rye before corn, it might be a good idea to pay attention to how much nitrogen is in that cereal rye, and then find a way to replace it or to make to plant the cereal rye in a way where it does not affect the corn growing zone. And that's where you get the precision planted cover crop. And then number three, you might have the ability with the overwintering legume to have a nitrogen credit. With the prices of nitrogen now, farmers are looking for opportunities to cut back on inputs to maintain their profit margin. Number four, as Dr. Roth stated well, you could use UAV drones in order to assess the spatial distribution of growth of cover crops across your field, create management zones, and adapt your management based on your conservation, your cover crops that you adopted.
That's Shalimar Armstrong. He is at Purdue University, joined us here at the Cover Crops meeting in Homer, Illinois, along with Dr. Richard Roth, also from Purdue. Our thanks go to the Champaign County NRCS for putting the meeting together. And I will remind you that you can also find the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy podcast on our website at willag.org, just willag.org. There you can just hit podcast and you'll find a way to get yourself subscribed to that. You can also ask for it on places like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and just about any place else. And one other thing, If you visit the FarmDoc website, farmdoc.illinois.edu, and search out the cover crops tool, it probably will be helpful for you as well. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather. Thanks, Mike, for being with us at tstorm.net. Can we begin in South America, please? How's the second crop corn doing there?
Well, they've been getting a lot of rain in Brazil over the last month or so, and that's been helping out the corn crop. So at this point in time, we don't have too many concerns about it. Not only do we see some good rains recently, but we have more on the way over the next 2 weeks. Several cool fronts are going to move through, and that will produce near and above normal rainfall going forward. We need to do that over the next several weeks. So there are well-timed rains, and it will continue to help that crop going forward.
Here in the United States, the hard red winter wheat crop has had trouble since it was planted. Has that been alleviated at all, and what do you see for it?
Certainly saw a lot of rain earlier in the week. The big system that's still moving through the Corn Belt today brought them big rains on Monday and Tuesday, and that substantially alleviated the dryness story in the plains. Prior to Monday, you could argue pretty easily that the hard red winter wheat crop was the driest in March in more than 8 years based on our proprietary data. Since then, the coverage of dryness dropped 40 to 50 points because of all the rain we saw in key areas of Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, and then into more rain probably the week after that as well, exactly how each of these systems pans. At this point in time, we think the near normal rainfall is fairly probable. Crop story there, while it might linger, it certainly turned a lot wetter in the last week, and it's going to stay wetter going into April.
And finally, what do you see for the middle part of the Corn Belt as we head into the corn and soybean planting season?
Well, we'll start thinking about planting in about a week or two, and that's have to start paying a little more attention to exactly what's been going on. But essentially, it's been pretty wet in the southern Corn Belt lately, and that wetness has extended into the mid-south. As we get into next week, a big system is going to move on Wednesday and Thursday. And once we get to that system, we'll start to see some pretty decent rains. Now, since it's still almost a week away, it'll take a little bit of time to figure out all the details. But at this point in time, we think that a decent rainfall event is on the way with 3/4 of an inch on the low side to 1.5 or 2 inches on the high side. And if we put that rain Wednesday and Thursday week, that's right about when we could start thinking a little bit about planting. After that system goes, there's a color behind it. And because of that, we think that the start of April is going to be a little bit wet. Now, we're not talking about crazy amounts of rain at this point, but it is going to be stormier than it has been over the last couple of months. So I think that'll be something as we move into the end of the month and certainly in the start of April. But whether or not it starts to become a bigger factor really depends on whether 2 to 3, even 4 weeks from now. And that's just a little bit too far away to think too much about.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great being here. Can I talk to you next week?
Indeed we will. That's Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather and joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium on this Thursday afternoon.